There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com. The Bookshelf, what you should be reading.
So The Valley at the Centre of the World, that's the next book that you're talking about. What's the name of the author?
I'm going with Malachy Tallack. I believe that is correct, but I've not double-checked my sources on this, so let's go with it.
Let's go with it. So would you mind telling us a little bit about what it's about?
Sure. So this book is set in Shetland, which is a small island just off the northern tip of Scotland. So it's set along the sort of rugged? Not rugged at all.
Creator of words.
More sporting books, not. The rugged western coast of Shetland. And it's a very small community living in a valley. I think there's maybe like seven people at any one time living in this tiny community. And it's how they're really just following them as they go about their daily lives over the course of almost a year, seeing how these relationships intermingle.
And it sounds like it's quite a sedate book when you read it. And I think Malachy is an incredible writer, because I think incredible writers manage to kind of stretch place and time that for anybody else would be impossible to write about, and it would fill maybe one page. But he manages to, the character again in this, nature, the surroundings, they're a character in their own right, like they are in Beartown almost, and kind of the effect that the landscape has on the way the community lives and thrives is huge.
Yes. I got to the end of this book and felt a bit like, what's just happened? What was the story here? I've enjoyed this. It's almost like a meditation as I'm reading through this book, but what's actually happened? And I thought, first of all, that's a negative thing that I'm thinking that. But actually, it's staying with me, this book, probably more than Beartown. I think it's much more subtle. And what we're learning from it, we're not being handheld quite as much as we are in the Frederick Backman book. But yes, nature is obviously a huge part of this. And I think you get a crystal clear picture of what this valley looks like. But even more than that, what it feels like. And I loved this because obviously it's all about Scottish weather. So he's talking about things like, you know, the rain and how it's whipping and battering and stinging. But, you know, he describes it so perfectly. And then he talks about a storm. I like this. An afternoon darkening and straining towards a storm like an angry dog on a lead. He uses lots of, you know, comparisons like that, and I think it works really well, so you get a real feel for how hardened these community members must be that they're sticking it out there.
Another little recommendation for anybody listening is Malachy Tallack also writes non-fiction. This is his first work of fiction. But if you hear him reading, or you read any of his non-fiction books, I think 60 Degrees North is one of them, Undiscovered Islands is another. He writes like this, but for nonfiction, and it's incredible. It's just as good, and it reads like a thriller. Like when he writes about being chased by a bear, it reads like a work of fiction. So he's phenomenal. I'm a big fan of him. But one thing that wasn't crystal clear for me, I thought the language and the description of the surroundings were crystal clear, but when you first open this book and you are met with the Shetland dialect, there's a glossary at the beginning of the book. And for good reason, because nothing makes sense. And for a while I tried reading it, and I don't know about you, but I thought I would get the hang of it as I read, but I couldn't figure out in my head what it was supposed to sound like. So I actually had to go on YouTube and try and listen to people talking in a Shetland dialect to figure out what the character sounded like in my head. So if you'd like to listen to Shetland dialect, I have some pre-prepared.
Being brought up in a pretty crafting, fishing community, my childhood. When I come awa to Edinburgh, where I bide new and I'm bidden for 50 year, I found Edinburgh really quite awe-inspiring and quite scary. And of course, I had to be careful for who I spat, because I had to speak English. We learned to speak English at school, of course. We had to be bilingual and no be rude. But I did miss no being able to speak in my NY.
That's so interesting.
It is so interesting.
That's the most beautiful thing I've ever heard.
It's weird. It has different... I heard a little bit of Australian, a little bit of South African, a little bit of... It was really interesting.
It's a real mix of things. And I think what was... If you want to actually listen to... Her name's Christina, and I think it's part of something that Wikipedia does called Wiki Tongues. So they're, I think they're recording a few people in certain dialects so that you can hear what they sound like. And there's like a full-length clip on YouTube that you can go and listen to. It's not been captioned yet, though. But I find that the more that you read it... So once I had that in my head, the more I was reading it, I didn't actually need the glossary. It just kind of... I got the gist of what people were saying.
For me, it was all of the do's instead of you's and D instead of... What was D instead of me? No, I can't remember now. But yeah, as they're trying to bring that into part of the language, I kept thinking, right, I have to translate this in my head.
Or even when she said... Now she said spack, and I think she meant spoke.
Yeah, or speak. Yeah.
Or speak. And I was like, what? Wait, hang on. Did she say spat? And I was like, okay. Then I clicked it. When I read this book, I didn't know anything about what it was about, and I didn't even know where Shetland was. And so when I was reading it, I was reading the dialect, I just assumed they were Jamaican because of the way it was written.
Oh, my goodness.
Like, I was like, this doesn't really make sense with the story. How can they be Jamaican? And then I Googled, and I figured out, oh,
the freezing
it's in
cold.
Scotland. Okay. But I really wish I had heard... this woman speaking before I'd actually read it, because it would have helped build up the world in my head and the sounds, because it was the dialect was a little bit of an issue for me at first anyway.
I'm just picturing Bob Marley and the Wailers, how they would have turned out if they'd
in a slightly different
grown up in Shetland.
It is important though, because it does give you the lilting feel when you hear her speaking there, and then that affects how you sort of translate how they're saying things, or the inflections of a joke or something. Mm-hmm. It does matter. My favourite one, and I didn't know this one, Fantin, which means starving. That comes up quite a few times. I thought I'm going to remember that, because some of them are words that have, you know, they've come across to the mainland, so I knew them, but there was a few that I was having to have a look at the glossary.
You mentioned there's only about like 7 people in the community in this book at any one time, and throughout the book there are a couple of different characters. I think for some of them that is an escape, almost. The constraint of the island is an escape. And then for others, I mean, I'm just thinking about it, I'd feel, I think, imprisoned by that.
I quite liked that it brought this up, because there are a lot of small communities like this, particularly in the islands of Scotland, but everywhere. And I was thinking about how when you live in a city, relationships can almost be expendable. You know how they say, oh, if you're around someone who doesn't make you feel good, just, you know, cast them aside. But these people don't have that option. And I thought, I wonder, is that better, is it worse? I don't know. But they, you know, they're forced to have to... bond and see past things that might be an issue in normal social constructs. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, David, who's kind of the main character, he's, I think, probably in his 50s, and he's grown up there after generations of his family. So he's lived in this valley his whole life. I think he's maybe had 1 year in the dizzy heights of Aberdeen, and then he's come back to the valley. And his daughter had moved there with her boyfriend, and then they split up, and the daughter leaves. But the boyfriend, the ex-boyfriend, stays. And David actually still embraces that relationship and still wants to pass on his knowledge to this young guy. He has to see past what might be an issue at other times, because they all depend on each other so much in this little community.
I actually think that this is the opening scene as well. That's when I knew that he's a brilliant writer, is that scene when they were in the shed and they were... opening up the lambs. They had slaughtered a couple of baby lambs, and the way he'd explained how they were doing it and the way it was paralleled against this breakdown of the relationship between David's daughter and her boyfriend was so subtly done, but also in a way that I think sets the tone of what they're kind of exploring as well. I think especially the relationship between the daughter and David, her ex-boyfriend, and how the the explanation of the lambs being opened up and what happens. And then at the end, you think, okay, that's done. And they're like, okay, now we've got to do the next one. I think they do about 10 lambs or something. Mm-hmm. That's when I kind of realized, okay, this is a really, in compared to Bear Town, where it's they're both about community and isolation and this cold weather or whatever. It was more, I guess, stretched out, or there you sort of go in more into the mentality or the subconscious, I think, of the characters, and compared to Bear Town, where you kind of have not a surface explanation of the characters, but it's more, I think, in depth.
I love that he does this. I think it's, this book is almost like a commentary on the everyday.
Yes.
You're viewing everyday life, and he's not trying to make any more or any less of that through his beautiful writing. Mm-hmm. He does. But he, and in fact, he even resists moments where I think, oh, he could have thrown in some big incident here. He could have, you know, given us some other dramatic moment. He does build to a crescendo of, yeah, of a sort of small crescendo of a moment in the book. But he resists the temptation. For example, so Maggie, who's one of the characters who had been living in the community her whole life, and she passes away, and another of the ladies in the community wants to write a story about her, and she's searching to try get some sort of meaty information about Maggie. Like, there must be more than everybody's telling her about Maggie, because everyone just keeps saying, oh, she was just Maggie. Yeah. You know, she talked about the weather, and she talked about the croft, and that's what she did. And she finds her diaries, and they just back this up. It's just, you know, the same things day in, day out. But that's who this woman was, and that's enough. You know, they talk a lot about happiness, because they have these two townies, as they call them, that move into the community. And they're sort of a bit bewildered that people live like this, and they're saying, you know, are you happy? I mean, basically, you know, they're really asking, how on earth are you surviving this? Yeah. This is crazy. But they say, well, you know, what more would we be looking for? We're contented. Isn't that enough? So it's a little question. I think all these things then get you thinking as a reader. Would it be, you know, what's better? You know, are we looking for quick thrills all the time? Have they actually worked it out?
It really did make me think in a completely different way to Bear Town. So Bear Town was a kind of, you had to race to find out what was happening with all of the characters. And then with this, it was so subtly done. I think, yes, I've got two books here where we're contrasting two small communities, but small community doesn't begin to cover the size of the community in the valley at the center of the world. It's minuscule. But I think by extension, everything else is magnified. So those connections between people, it all means so much more because there are so few of them. Daily life is magnified. Daily life means so much more when you're interacting with so few people. And I think it's also the landscape that manages to do that, because it highlights how even smaller everybody is, because it's so powerful.
And how much of an impact then that landscape has on who these people become. They're almost more self-sufficient than the average person. They're more introspective probably than the average person. Or certainly we get to see that more through the way that the book is written.
One thing that I will bring up, because often we talk about who to recommend these books to. So very quickly, who would you recommend them to?
What type of person would
I
recommend?
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking Elmet. If you like Elmet by Fiona
Oh, my goodness.
Great comparison.
Yeah, I kept thinking of Elmet when I was reading this Malachy Tallack book. It's very similar in the way of creating this amazing sense of place. He does that so well, as she does so well. And the characters really stay with you, which I felt with both books.
And Bear Town, I think, quite frankly, if you like Frederick Backlang's other work, you will still absolutely love Bear Town. He comments on humanity and common kind of themes really, really well.
It's very optimistic, Frederick's book. If you believe in human nature, read, you can read.
And the triumph of the underdog.
Yes.
Especially compared to the other books, which I think are a bit darker than this one.
Yes.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.